back open for exploration. See the West Coast Biennial Art Exhibition featuring diverse pieces by artists up and down the West Coast. Enjoy the Visible River Aquarium, Caverns Exhibits, Parrot Playhouse, and more. There's something for everyone to discover at Turtle Bay.
It's never too late to achieve your dream, to turn a skill into a career. At Shasta College, we have late start classes right now and online classes where the commute from the couch to the class has never been easier. We're also offering 8-week compressed classes, same units, half the time. Now is the right time to upskill or reskill for high-demand jobs employers are hiring for. Find out more. Visit ShastaCollege.edu today.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Turtle Bay Annual Auction is going virtual. Now everyone can take part in bidding on exciting items and supporting Turtle Bay. Bidding begins March 11th. Tune in for the live virtual watch party March 20th on Facebook Live or YouTube. Go to turtlebay.org and click the online auction banner to register and learn more.
Zip on over to Drip, now open at 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson, next to Anytime Fitness. Drip features healthy and delicious drinks and shakes. Drip offers energy teas packed with antioxidants, delicious full meal replacement shakes, coffee loaded with protein, power oats, energy drinks, and so much more. Drip is open Monday through Friday from 7 to 7 and weekends 8 to 4. Stop by today, 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson. Zip on over to Drip.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE. Or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard. Or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Reading Electric Utility cares about the whole community, and we offer an income-qualified residential energy discount program that can save you up to $400 a year on your energy bill. And once per year, CARES bill credit up to $300. To find out if your income qualifies you for a residential discount program and CARES program, call 339-7200. That number again is 339-7200. Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way. Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans' issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5, 1460 AM.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today we're talking about Trinidad's Espiritu Series No. 2, crafted with tobaccos from Brazil and Nicaragua and wrapped in an Arapiraca leaf. Espiritu No. 2 produces a harmonious medium to full-bodied cigar with extraordinary zesty complexity and earthy notes. Come by the shop and pick up your Trinidad Espiritu No. 2 today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Redding.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So, what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world: family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Premier, your friendly old change. Premier in all we do.
The seasons are changing. Keeping your family healthy is important. So is the health of your car. The longevity of your vehicle depends on you to make sure your oil, radiator, coolant, windshield wipers, and other vital systems have all been taken care of so your car can bring your healthy family through the seasons. Drive into Premier Oil Change today and experience the friendly oil change. Premier doesn't require an appointment, and you don't drop your car off or wait. Premier changes your fluids while you stay in the comfort and safety of your own car. Enjoy a free beverage and free Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point certified service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park, or in Anderson across from Round Table Pizza. All locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Home of the friendly oil change.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Hi, I'm Sue Blake with Powerhouse Solar. Solar energy not only makes financial sense, but right now you can go solar for zero money down. And you may qualify to get the 26% federal tax credit. At Powerhouse Solar, we are an elite dealer for SunPower, and we install the most cost-effective and highest efficiency panels. A lot of people don't realize they have options now. You can get the SunPower SunVault battery and solar with financing. so keeping the lights on when the grid goes down is easier than ever. And the entire system is backed by their 25-year warranty. Powerhouse Solar can design a system for your specific needs. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600 or visit us on the web at powerhousesolar.com. Again, call Powerhouse Solar at 275-5600 or visit us online at powerhousesolar.com.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR, Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw to?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
Everybody!
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Redding area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423 at Advanced Automotive.
Go not to the elves for counsel, for they will say both no and yes. J.R.R. Tolkien.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hole.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Our monster of the day. These can really be true monsters. It's the Fae. Those tricky buggers.
We're talking not only fairies, but elves, pixies, sometimes gnomes are considered fae. There are a lot of creatures that are vaguely humanoid with a little bit of a magical twist and often have a very druidic nature in their style of magic. So we are calling them as a super category fae.
With the fae usually comes an almost human appearance. They have the same general shape. They're a humanoid. But there's something different. There's something magical, mystical about them.
A lot of times they're the people who wield the plant-type magic. So if you go into a fae kind of realm, they have their own homelands in a way. And they have interesting light. They are associated with interesting kinds of lighting styles and plant-based architecture. Bridges that are made out of vines and life in the trees and that kind of thing. Most of our monsters are going to be either animalistic or way above humans or a dumb version of humans. The Fae tend to be almost equivalent, if not for their longevity. And therefore, they're able to be a little wiser in a lot of respects.
But the definition and the traditions of what fae are have changed and developed so much over the years. So in the 16th century, you had a philosopher, alchemist, toxicologist named Paracelsus who classified elves and gnomes as spirits of the air. And that's definitely not what we picture today when we think of elves and gnomes.
I think, like our opener quote kind of implied, Tolkien has redefined what elves are for us. Until Tolkien, almost everybody thought of elves as being anywhere between child size to the size of your fist.
Tinkerbell size.
Yeah.
But now we picture elves as tall, elegant, graceful, walking beings because Tolkien redefined the word.
And I think a lot of the references that I hear to elves in my personal life end up coming through Dungeons & Dragons. They have a very Tolkien style of elf, although I do believe in the version I play, they're slightly shorter than humans.
It depends on the kind of elf. Going back to EverQuest, which was the first, like, digital version of D&D, this is where I got my definitions of elves. You had the high elves, which were very Tolkien-esque, tall, elegant elves. You had wood elves that were the shorter, more druidic-based elves. And then night elves, which are in D&D drow.
And if you wanted to listen to another episode talking about the character of elves, we did kind of mention this style in our Shoulder Angels episode, which was back in February, where we talked about the id, ego, super ego. A lot of this super ego stuff gets applied to elves. And that's why I am including Vulcans in the elf, mostly in just modern mythology.
They're space elves.
They play basically the same role in the story.
You go back in history, and elves are more like Santa's elves. Small creatures there to help, or Harry Potter's house elves, where they're helpers, they're servants in some kind of way. But elves aren't the only fae out there.
Probably my favorite are the Tinkerbell pixie type elves in the movie Willow. They were called brownies. The little guys that just kind of make mischief. They'll move stuff around and they'll maybe cast little bits of magic here and there, and they can disappear and reappear. They apparently have a huge hankering for cream. They, like, get drunk off of fresh cream.
So you have your fairies, pixies, brownies. These are very Celtic in origin. There's a lot of those associations where you can throw out a handful of salt and they have to count every single bit of salt that fell.
That's how you catch a pixie, if you're curious.
Yeah.
And if you want more research on that, there's a fantastic Supernatural episode. It's great.
Fight the fairies! So you also have things like gnomes. Our definition of gnomes in the nerd world are different than the definition of gnomes in a lot of the normal world, because you have gnomes as in, like, World of Warcraft D&D gnomes, and then you have garden gnomes. They're very different.
But gnomes tend to be even smaller than normally a childlike house elf, and that's, I think, size is a big difference between gnomes and dwarves. But they enjoy the non-living parts of the earth, mostly gems and that kind of thing.
In a lot of, like, D&D type culture, they are associated with the tinkerers. They're the steampunk characters that are creating the mechanical what's-its that might just explode.
One of my fondest images of elves and the fae in general actually comes from Shakespeare. If you've ever seen A Midsummer Night's Dream, basically they get lost in the woods and this fairy queen comes and takes them on this adventure that they go on. And it's all very mystical and magical, and everyone portrays it slightly different, which is one of my favorite things about Shakespeare, is you'll never see the same Shakespeare twice.
You also have a lot of fae represented in Arthurian traditions. Prince Arthur and the fairy queen. If you've seen the recent Netflix show Cursed, it's a different representation of the fae and magical beings with King Arthur before he was King Arthur.
And I think Witcher had some references to elves in a way that is not commonly seen nowadays. They weren't the tall, elegant, must-be-respected kind of characters. So that was an interesting look at those characters.
Most of the ones we've been talking about are usually benign. Sometimes tricksters, sometimes out just to have a little bit of fun. But then you have some that are just straight up evil.
The red cap is basically an evil version of the gnome. They can be tamed, but mostly just by evil people, into becoming something between an ally and a pet.
One of the ones you may think of first would be the changelings. This was seen in the show and book series Outlander, the idea that these beings will switch out a infant child with a changeling child, and they'll kill the human child and force the humans to raise the changeling child so that they don't have to do it.
And in order to deal with the changeling, if it happens soon enough, they might be willing to, like, trade the child back if you manage to figure out that it's not your kid before they kill your actual kid.
You also have Will-o'-the-Wisps, and these are represented very differently in a lot of different media. So you have Brave, where the Will-o'-the-Wisps are treated more like light beings that are just leading her toward her destiny. But in a lot of classic traditions, if you followed the Will-o'-the-Wisp, you would die.
They often hung out around bogs and swamps. So if you followed this light, you would end up stuck in this bog and you would die there.
Historical basis for this. What actually was happening were gases from the swamp or bog lighting on fire, and it would just kind of flash and people would follow it and fall into the swamp. Like, that's what actually was happening. One of the biggest questions with the Fae is, how do you deal with them?
We mentioned earlier throwing salt on the ground will stall them, so they have to stand there and count every single one.
A lot of the classic interpretations make Fae really vulnerable to iron. Like, it'll burn their skin if they touch it.
But mostly, I think the best way to deal with them is to just don't deal with them.
Avoid them and never make a deal with a fairy.
Absolutely. That's where a bit of the trickster magic comes in, which is very indicative of the fairies and the pixies.
So if you are interested in writing fairies, writing the Fae into your story, remember that you aren't limited to what you've seen before. These traditions have changed and developed and become something completely new over the centuries. Pull from whatever part of it you want. That's what makes this fun.
I think Fae will end up being a fantastic addition to a fantasy-type world. They're one of those monsters that are incredibly social. They have that whole culture to themselves, that they're doing their own thing. So it's easy to put a drop in. Your readers get an idea of, oh, the world is enormous, but they have enough of an idea to just sort of set that concept aside. But of course, writing elves are also a lot of fun. And that's what it comes down to, really, is having fun with it and
writing selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. 1 Samuel chapter 17.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Essis. And today we are talking about basically just people, but magically bigger people.
That would be the giants. Now, we're not talking about Andre the Giant, giants, not people who are just incredibly tall. We are talking about actual mythical creatures, legends, tales of races of tall people.
Across the world, a lot of cultures show tall people as powerful people. I believe there are two different Shinto emperors who are reported to have been more than 10 feet tall. So at first sight, if your hero is encountering a giant, they can be very intimidated without even talking to or encountering physically.
So when we're talking about these mythical giants, the biggest thing about them in most legends is that they're basically people, but big. They are sometimes slower, less intelligent, but always strong.
And I've found cannibalism is something that we see a lot of, or at least eating humans in some way. You know, grind your bones for bread kind of a mantra. We see that in a couple of different giant stories around the world.
I have a hard time siding with Jack on the Jack and the Beanstalk story. What would you do if somebody invaded your house and stole your stuff?
Probably exactly the same thing.
So let's get into some examples of giant or large, intimidating, strong creatures. Of course, you have your trolls and your ogres and your orcs.
A lot of the references to giants are an alternate race, similar to elves and dwarves, where they are human-like, but not. They aren't exactly gods. They aren't demonic in any way. They're mostly just a different kind of people.
In Norse mythology, you have the Jotuns.
And to be clear, the Avengers mythology as well.
Of course, the frost giants from Jotunheim are very based on this race of giants in Norse mythology.
There was a carving that was dated to about the 10th century AD of, I'm not going to try to pronounce her name because I'm going to butcher it, but one of the Jotun riding a dog, like a horse, might have been a wolf. And she had, like, reins on it, but the reins were made of snakes. It was a very interesting depiction of, because most of the time when we see giants, we don't see them using tools in that kind of a sophisticated way. It's mostly like a club and smash Harry Potter in the bathroom. And of course, heading south to the Middle East, the Judeo-Christian history, we have the Philistines, which our opener was referencing, these gigantic warrior-type people.
Even if you aren't super familiar with the Judeo-Christian beliefs, you likely have heard the term Goliath. You've heard that and know that it references a giant, a huge human that is not easily defeated. So if we want to go down under to Australia, there is an oral tradition of a giant known as Crooked Mick.
If you're listening from the U.S., you probably know who Paul Bunyan is. Crooked Mick is like Paul Bunyan, but cooler. Not only does he like chop down stuff and shear sheep and such, but he makes great pies, apparently.
Not only are his pies good, but they are light, so light that a gust of wind can carry them away. And not only are pies getting carried away, if he kicks a crocodile, he can send it to the moon. I love this, and it's just so much fun that you've just got this, like, Australian bushman that's going out there kicking crocodiles and baking pies.
So you want to look that one up? That's Crooked Mick.
And then, of course, you have a giant that is super familiar because of its prominence in Greek and Roman tradition, and that's the Cyclops.
He's also familiar because he's the dude with one eye. Which is interesting because most of the depictions I see of the Cyclops, he has the holes in the face in a normal where humans would have eyes, but they're just sort of skinned over, and then he has a third eye at the top of the center of the forehead. I always thought that was weird. It wasn't like they were, like, merged, you know?
I'm just picturing the Cyclops and Hercules, the Disney animated version, where it's just, like, one big eye that's, like, half his face in the middle of his forehead. He has a very tall forehead as a result.
most of the ones we've talked about so far are enemies of humans in some way.
Except for Crooked Mick. He's saving them from the crocodiles.
Okay, that's fair. I am talking about the Gentile, I believe it's pronounced. These are a race of giants found in the northern parts of Spain, close to where it meets France, in that little bay there. They existed, and they basically just hung out with the humans, and they were really known for their ability to throw rocks, and that's how a bunch of the little islands off the coast were formed. But they were said to have lived alongside the Basque people at one point.
They were also said to have invented metallurgy, the saw, and grew the first wheat, and then taught the humans how to farm.
Most of them disappeared when the comet flew across the sky around the same time that Christ was born. That was sort of a harbinger for them to go, okay, it's bedtime, and they basically just went and lived under a mountain. And of a lot of the giants we find, these ones are furry, they're hairier. Until we get into more modern mythology and cryptozoology.
Fun cryptozoology. If we want to go a little coastal islander, in Fijian mythology, there is a giant who was so large that his teeth looked like they were burning logs. And that is why his name is Flaming Teeth.
So he basically tortured the humans in the village for so long that a bunch of warriors went, lured him under a big rock, and then pushed it over on him. He died, and his teeth were brought back to the village, which brought fire to the humans.
Fascinating. And then if we go to Eastern Asian cultures and mythologies, the Hindu and Buddhist cultures have the Rakshasas, and they were depicted as shape-shifting, fierce-looking, enormous creatures with two fangs that protruded from the top of their mouth.
They have a lot of similarities between them and a lot of the vampire mythology. Oh. The shape-shifting, the eating people, needing to be invited into a building. These are all Rakshasa tropes that also appear with vampires, which we'll talk about in three episodes.
Yes.
These ones are a little strange because I didn't necessarily want to put shape-shifters in with giants because giants are naturally large creatures. And these ones can appear humanoid, but they are described as giant, larger than, scarier than humans, and with a lot more magical abilities than most giants we're going to see. And again, eating people is a thing.
So let's look into the literature and references to giants in fiction as we know it today in modern ages.
Of course, from Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels, we have the Brobdingnag, which is a giant, and opposite the Lilliputians, which are the tiny people we talked about a couple episodes ago.
And Gulliver's like the normal-sized person in the middle?
Yep.
Okay.
But if you're younger and you're looking for it, Roald Dahl has the BFG.
Big Friendly Giant. One of my favorites is actually Fezzik from The Princess Bride. Absolutely love him. So great. And then the classic example, the Cyclops from Odyssey.
And the last one I just want to touch on, because I think this is how most people are familiar with giants and trolls and half-giants and such, is Harry Potter. We see trolls in the first book, and then one of the closest friends of the main characters is half-giant.
Yeah, and in Harry Potter, the half-giants are especially considered looked down on as lesser beings because of their mixed race.
So if I'm being plagued by a giant, how do I take it down?
Just make them fall over.
Okay. Crushing under their own weight. We see this a couple of different ways. We see that, of course, in Mickey Mouse had some of that. And I think the most classic version is Jack and the Beanstalk.
When he makes the giant fall off the beanstalk, chops it down while the giant's climbing down. Another thing when it comes to giants is the eyes tend to be vulnerable, especially with your Cyclopses.
And I believe that's how the hero actually defeated the Cyclops, was he drove a spear or a lance into the Cyclops' eye.
And in general, you deal with a giant the same way you would deal with a human. They're stronger, they're bigger, but they have the same kind of vulnerabilities. Their anatomy is generally the same.
Of course, you could go with the Princess Bride logic and the Fijian logic.
The moment his head is in view, hit it with a rock!
Seem to work for them. They have fire. And in general, most of the time, you're going to see your heroes be smarter and more agile than your giants.
D&D stats, they have better dexterity.
Yep.
I hope this information has helped you, given a few ideas about introducing a giant character or giant race into your stories.
And these are an easy one, I think, to slip in, because it's not like the Chimera, which we'll talk about next episode. Basically, everyone in your audience goes, giant, right, I have an image of that in my head. I don't need a 3-page description in order to follow the plot.
So go out, create, have fun, put giants into your story, and always
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. 1 Samuel chapter 17.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Essis. And today we are talking about basically just people, but magically bigger people.
That would be the giants. Now, we're not talking about Andre the Giant giants, not people who are just incredibly tall. We are talking about actual mythical creatures, legends, tales of races of tall people.
Across the world, a lot of cultures show tall people as powerful people. I believe there are two different Shinto emperors who are reported to have been more than 10 feet tall. These huge giant people, literally very tall, makes them very powerful to see. So at first sight, if your hero is encountering a giant, they can be very intimidated without even talking to or encountering physically.
So when we're talking about these mythical giants, the biggest thing about them in most legends is that they're basically people, but big. They are sometimes slower, less intelligent, but always strong.
And I've found across my different studies of giants around the world, cannibalism is something that we see a lot of, or at least eating humans in some way. You know, grind your bones for bread kind of a mantra. We see that in a couple of different giant stories around the world.
I have a hard time siding with Jack on the Jack and the Beanstalk story. What would you do if somebody invaded your house and stole your stuff?
Probably exactly the same thing.
Maybe not eat them, but, you know.
At least smush them.
Yes. So let's get into some examples of giant or large, intimidating, strong creatures. Of course, you have your trolls and your ogres and your orcs.
And urukai, which are important.
Urukai!
A lot of the references to giants are an alternate race, similar to elves and dwarves, where they are human-like, but not. They aren't exactly gods. They aren't demonic in any way. They're mostly just a different kind of people.
In Norse mythology, you have the Jotuns.
And to be clear, the Avengers mythology as well.
Of course, the frost giants from Jotunheim are very based on this race of giants in Norse mythology.
There was a carving that was dated to about the 10th century AD of, I'm not going to try to pronounce her name because I'm going to butcher it, but one of the Jotun riding a dog like a horse, might have been a wolf. And she had, like, reins on it, but the reins were made of snakes. It was a very interesting depiction of, because most of the time when we see giants, we don't see them using tools in that kind of a sophisticated way. It's mostly like a club and smash Harry Potter in the bathroom.
If you want to look that up, I believe the pronunciation is Hyrokin. It's Hyrokkin.
And of course, heading south to the Middle East, the Judeo-Christian history, we have the Philistines, which our opener was referencing, these gigantic warrior-type people.
Even if you aren't super familiar with the Judeo-Christian beliefs, you likely have heard the term Goliath. You've heard that and know that it references a giant, a huge human that is not easily defeated. So if we want to go down under to Australia, there is an oral tradition of a giant known as Crooked Mick.
If you're listening from the U.S., you probably know who Paul Bunyan is. Crooked Mick is like Paul Bunyan, but cooler. Not only does he like chop down stuff and shear sheep and such, but he makes great pies, apparently.
Not only are his pies good, but they are light, so light that a gust of wind can carry them away. And not only are pies getting carried away, if he kicks a crocodile, he can send it to the moon. Sorry, I'm having a really hard time keeping a straight face during this. I love this, and it's just so much fun that you've just got this, like, Australian bushman that's going out there kicking crocodiles and baking pies.
And generally doing everything that, you know, humans do, but way cooler. So you want to look that one up? That's Crooked Mick. And that's more legend than, like, people believed he actually existed. I mean, obviously spurned from somewhere.
Again, much like Paul Bunyan.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have a giant that is super familiar because of its prominence in Greek and Roman tradition, and that's the Cyclops.
He's also familiar because he's the dude with one eye. Which is interesting because most of the depictions I see of the Cyclops, he has the holes in the face in a normal where humans would have eyes, but they're just sort of skinned over, and then he has a third eye at the top of the center of the forehead. I always thought that was weird. It wasn't like they were like merged, you know?
I'm just picturing the Cyclops and Hercules, the Disney animated version. Where it's just, like, one big eye that's, like, half his face in the middle of his forehead. He has a very tall forehead as a result.
Most of the ones we've talked about so far are enemies of humans in some way. They're hunting them, they're smashing rocks and trying to kill the normal everyman.
Except for Crooked Mick, he's saving them from the crocodiles.
Okay, that's fair. I am talking about the Gentile, I believe it's pronounced. These are a race of giants found in the northern parts of Spain, close to where it meets France, in that little bay there. They existed, and they basically just hung out with the humans, and they were really known for their ability to throw rocks, and that's how a bunch of the little islands off the coast were formed. But they were said to have lived alongside the Basque people at one point.
They were also said to have invented metallurgy, the saw, and grew the first wheat, and then taught the humans how to farm.
Most of them disappeared when the comet flew across the sky around the same time that Christ was born. That was sort of a harbinger for them to go, okay, it's bedtime, and they basically just went and lived under a mountain.
There was one that was said to have remained. known as Olentzero, O-L-E-N-T-Z-E-R-O, and he's said to appear at Christmas and is reproduced as a straw doll.
And of a lot of the giants we find, these ones are furry, they're hairier, until we get into more modern mythology and cryptozoology.
Fun cryptozoology. If we want to go a little coastal islander, in Fijian mythology, there is a giant who was so large that his teeth looked like they were burning logs. And that is why his name is Flaming Teeth.
Very original. So he basically tortured the humans in the village for so long that a bunch of warriors went, lured him under a big rock, and then pushed it over on him. He died, and his teeth were brought back to the village, which brought fire to the humans.
Fascinating.
We all have some sort of this is how humans got fire story, I think.
And it's never, hey, we boofed two rocks together and went, ooh, look, fire. And then if we go to Eastern Asian cultures and mythologies, the Hindu and Buddhist cultures have the Rakshasas, and they were depicted as shape-shifting, fierce-looking, enormous creatures with two fangs that protruded from the top of their mouth.
They have a lot of similarities between them and the modern Bram Stoker version of Dracula, of a lot of the vampire mythology.
Oh.
The shape-shifting, the eating people, especially their blood, needing to be invited into a building. These are all Rakshasa tropes that also appear with vampires, which we'll talk about in three episodes.
Yes.
These ones are a little strange because I didn't necessarily want to put shapeshifters in with giants because giants are naturally large creatures, and these ones can appear humanoid. But they are described as giant, larger than, scarier than humans, and with a lot more magical abilities than most giants we're going to see. And again, eating people is a thing.
So let's look into the literature and references to giants in fiction as we know it today in modern ages.
Of course, from Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels, we have the Brobdingnag, which is a giant and opposite the Lilliputians, which are the tiny people we talked about a couple episodes ago.
And Gulliver's like the normal-sized person in the middle?
Yep.
Okay. It has been a very long time since I've watched a movie that relates to that, and I've never read the book.
Yeah, it's been a while since I read the book. I didn't really follow most of it. I think I was a little too young for that. But if you're younger and you're looking for it, Roald Dahl has the BFG.
Big Friendly Giant. One of my favorites is actually Fezzik from The Princess Bride, portrayed by Andre the Giant. Absolutely love him. So great. And then the classic example, the Cyclops from Odyssey.
And the last one I just want to touch on, because I think this is how most people are familiar with giants and trolls and half-giants and such, is Harry Potter. We see trolls in the first book, and then one of the closest friends of the main characters is half-giant. They make fun of giant-type people a couple of different times. You know, just point and grunt. It's not that hard to talk their language.
Yeah, and in Harry Potter, the half-giants are especially considered looked down on as lesser beings because of their mixed race.
So if I'm being plagued by a giant, how do I take it down?
Just make them fall over.
Okay. Crushing under their own weight. We see this a couple of different ways. We see that, of course, in Mickey Mouse had some of that. And I think the most classic version is Jack and the Beanstalk.
When he makes the giant fall off the beanstalk, chops it down while the giant's climbing down. Again, Jack invaded his house. What else was he supposed to do?
She's not going to let this die.
I'm not. Another thing when it comes to giants is the eyes tend to be vulnerable, especially with your cyclopses. The eyes and the face in general.
And I believe that's how the hero actually defeated the cyclops, was he drove a spear or a lance into the cyclops' eye. And then the cyclops ran around going, nobody stabbed me in the eye, because he had convinced the cyclops that his name was Nobody.
And in general, you deal with a giant the same way you would deal with a human. They're stronger, they're bigger, but they have the same kind of vulnerabilities. Their anatomy is generally the same. But they may be a little bit more invulnerable to magic.
Of course, you could go with the Princess Bride logic and the Fijian logic.
The moment his head is in view, hit it with a rock!
Seem to work for them. They have fire. And in general, most of the time you're going to see your heroes be smarter and more agile than your giants. This goes back to your David and Goliath story of, okay, I have a power behind me that you can't take down, so I'm smarter, I'm faster, I'm going to whack you in the head with a rock. Even though I am smaller, I can still beat you.
D&D stats, they have better dexterity.
Yep.
I hope this information has helped you, given a few ideas about introducing a giant character or giant race into your stories. You can play with it. You can have fun with it. Remember, these are mythologies. These are malleable creatures that you can use and play with and do as you will.
And these are an easy one, I think, to slip in, because it's not like the Chimera, which we'll talk about next episode, where you have to describe this element and that element, and they're going to shoot fireballs and whatever at you because of the specifics of this particular monster. Basically, everyone in your audience goes, giant, right, I have an image of that in my head. I don't need a 3-page description in order to follow the plot.
So go out, create, have fun, put giants into your story, and always,
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
To write well, express yourself like the common people, but think like a wise man. Aristotle.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And I'm finally back in studio, out of quarantine and COVID-free. We are continuing our series about the pearls from the masters by talking about Aristotle, one of the oldest storytellers that we know of.
Definitely one of the oldest sets of rules in storytelling that you can find. He mostly was talking about theater, about dramas that way, because, of course, most people couldn't read in that era. So most of the communication of any kind came in the form of theater and acting and stories in that capacity.
But the same principles apply today. So we're going to take a look at some of his quotes. Obviously, they've been translated from their original language, but we will be taking a look at the quotes and analyzing them.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.